I don't know the reason why, but for some reason, the powers that be, higher than me, decided to leave a couple of verses out of that second reading. Right in the middle, St. Paul is saying, at my first defense, no one appeared on my behalf, but everyone deserted me. He goes on to say, and it was missing from the reading, naming all the people that abandoned him, and he ends up with the phrase, only Luke is with me. So I'm going to talk a little bit here in the beginning about what's not in the reading, only Luke is with me. We celebrated the feast of St. Luke the Evangelist this past Tuesday, and we know that he's the author of the third gospel, written somewhere between 70 and 85, and the Acts of the Apostles. They say it's a greater part of the New Testament than even the writings of St. Paul. He was a companion of St. Paul, at least on two of the missionary journeys. Tradition tells us that he was with Paul when he was imprisoned in Caesarea. That's the Roman city at the top of Jerusalem, before they took the boat ride, had the shipwreck to Rome for that 2 hours of 2 years of house arrest awaiting the Roman trial before the emperor. And supposedly Luke was with Paul during that time too, comforting him and helping him. St. Paul fondly refers to St. Luke as from Antioch, our beloved physician. So he was apparently a medical doctor. And his gospel, of course, is one of the later ones. He was a non-Jew, and he was a Gentile, if you want to use that word, and he wrote his gospel for Gentile Christians in a very polished, classical Greek style. Since he was, and this is speculation, in Rome at the time with Paul, and Peter was there along with his nephew, John Mark, and so Luke became acquainted with people that knew the Lord personally. He said he was not an eyewitness, first line of his gospel, and the Blessed Mother, and so he knew things of the infancy story and all that. That's speculation, but it could well be true. Of course, all of Mark's gospel, the earliest, the shortest gospel, is contained in St. Luke. All of it is contained, but sometimes Luke gives a little different skew to some of the sayings of Jesus or the circumstances or the events. St. Luke also has unique material to his gospel. I've talked about this before. The lost sheep, the lost coin, the sinful woman, the prodigal son, the good thief, found only in Luke. As well as what we're going to have next week, the story of that short tax collector that Jesus reformed right in the gospel, as you'll hear it next week. And, of course, this story of the Pharisee and the publican. I've talked about those seven unique things to Luke before, but I haven't mentioned how the biblical scholars characterize St. Luke's gospel with seven subtitles. I'm not going to comment on all of them, but I'll mention all of them. So the first subtitle is it's the Gospel of Mercy. We can see that, the special place that Jesus holds for sinners, the patience that he has with sinners, and of course with the suffering that need cure, like those 10 lepers last week. It's called the Gospel of Salvation because universal salvific will of God, as the theologians say. Jesus desires that everybody be saved. And St. Luke focuses on the little people, the shepherds who were outcast, the women disciples follow. Women were not considered equal to men back then, but the women disciples were given a lot of notice in Luke's gospel, including naming them. And some of the little people of faith, like Zachary, Elizabeth, Simeon, Anna, all those were mentioned. It's the Gospel of absolute renunciation. You have to take up your cross daily. Once you set your hand to the plow, you can't look back. Let me go bury my father. No, once you set your hand to the plow, you don't look back. I haven't come to bring peace on the earth. I've come to bring division. Set father against son and daughter-in-law against mother-in-law. We heard that this past week, too, and that's because some of the Gentiles were coming into the Christian faith and others were still worshiping the Roman and Greek gods, and that was in the same family, so you had that division. The last one that they characterized Luke's gospel is the gospel of joy. But I skipped the sixth one. I'm going to put that one last. The seventh one, the gospel of joy, because after Jesus appeared on the Mount of Ascension, he was taken from their sight, and they went into the temple and prayed and sang constantly. And then St. Luke takes off with his second volume, The Acts of the Apostles, showing how the faith goes out from Jerusalem to the whole known world, the whole Mediterranean basin. And this is the most important one. This is number six of the seven. It is the gospel of the Holy Spirit and prayer. 2 weeks ago, we heard a little bit about the qualities of prayer with the 10 lepers. Only this one came back to offer praise and thanks to God. The first part of prayer should be adoration, praise, and thanksgiving. And then and only then is it appropriate to ask God for things. I said last week here at the 5 o'clock Mass, the trouble is we put God out of the picture. We think we're in charge of things. And then when things go a little bit awry, we look to God and we start asking for things. Last week we had the unjust steward, persistence in prayer. This woman is bothering me so much, I'm going to give her what she asks, otherwise she's liable to harm me or something like that, the unjust. Persistence in prayer. How badly, how much do we want something? Mention it just once. So persistence in prayer is another quality. And today, a lesson in really qualitative prayer in this parable of the Pharisee and the publican. Dear friends, in this parable of the Pharisee and the publican, St. Luke is telling us that Jesus addresses it to people that are both self-righteous and enjoy looking down on everyone else. So, two men go up to the temple to pray. One is a religious leader. The other is a tax collector. People don't like tax collectors because they were adding a vig to what they collected and putting it in their own pocket. The Pharisee goes to his usual place, his pew, as it were, and immediately starts praying to himself. Though he thinks he prays to God, he's speaking to himself. Thankful that he's not a sinner like everyone else, nor is he greedy or dishonest. He's trustworthy. He keeps the commandments. He donates a full 10% of his income. In contrast, the tax collector, the publican, positions himself at a distance. He doesn't immediately start talking to God. He doesn't even presume to raise his eyes, but with his head bowed, he beats his breast. He's quite aware that he is a sinner, and he asks only that God be merciful. Now, like the Pharisee, I think I'm a pretty good person. I try to keep the commandments. I drop my envelope in. I don't tithe, but I contribute, as everybody else does, I'm sure. Thank God I'm not like other people. Wrong. Spiritual life begins with humility and, yes, with contrition. Nobody's perfect. God knows I'm not perfect. And, my dear friends, quality prayer begins with reaffirming the right relationship between God and ourselves. God is in charge of everything, above all the Creator that sings the song and keeps us in existence. We're just humble, simple creatures. And it is also with a keen awareness that only God can save us. We can't save ourselves. That leaves us with a qualitative kind of prayer.